ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Do you think you'd never be caught out by disinformation? Well, cast your mind back. Remember that big story about the bedbugs at the Paris Olympics? Well, that was actually a very effective Russian disinformation campaign. So effective that most people still believe it to this day. G'day, it's Hamish McDonald here. And I've learned that disinformation can be surprisingly subtle and hard to spot. If you want to join me interrogating the dark world of disinformation, stream The Matter of Facts now on ABC iView.
Please do this, are you?
A very British protest. Men, almost entirely men, shouting abuse at police and bystanders, and many of the protesters draping themselves in the red and white St George's flag of England or the Union Jack.
In the UK, more than 100,000 people have marched through London in an anti-immigration rally organised by the nationalist anti-Islam activist Tommy Robinson. The protests.
We've seen a very distinctive change in the way that people have been using flags, particularly the Union Jack, the Scottish Saltire and the St George's flag, over the last year or so across the United Kingdom.
Dominic Bryan, a professor of social anthropology at Queen's University Belfast, opening today's episode of Rear Vision.
Broadly, one of the key political issues has been over migration into the UK. I mean, it's been important for some time, but I think along with other countries in the world, it's gone up a notch in feeling. And there have been a number of anti-migrant protests, quite a number, in different parts of the UK and actually in the Republic of Ireland as well, because the tricolour has also been used. And one of the ways that has manifested itself is people putting national flags on lampposts in residential areas and sometimes near hotels, which are being used by the government to house migrants that have come into the country. Now, this form of marking space or marking territory as a type of protest, it has a particular form and has started happening across the UK and the Republic of Ireland in the ways it hasn't had before. It's been a distinct change in the way the flag is being used.
The British comedian and satirist Tom Walker, better known as Jonathan Pye, calls them the flag shaggers, political activists who physically wrap themselves in national flags while they push a very particular partisan political view. Hello, Anthony Fennell here. Welcome to the program. Now, it's not just a UK thing, of course. It's been happening in many countries over many years. So today on the show, the historic power and appeal of flags as symbols of unity, but also a division.
I'm Laura Schofield. I am a graphic designer and currently a design director at The Atlantic. Flags are a barometer of society. They witness revolutions, wars, and social movements, but they also kind of actively construct them. They help us construct a new narrative. They are indeed a visual anchor as a repository of memories, if you will. So their forms evolve with society's perception, and meaning our collective identity changes. So there is a need for a flag to represent that, or a flag that is going to help us visualize the new belief, the new story, the new idea behind. So they act as living archives of changing culture.
And they've been doing that for a very long time.
Flags go back as far as humans have needed to show who they are and where they belong and what they believe. Even before the idea of nations, right? The idea of how nations existed before that. There was this idea of fabrics, emblems, symbols that were signaling presence or worship, right? In battle, at seas, or in rituals. The first versions actually were pieces of cloth, pieces of metal, animal skin used in battles or like ceremonies to show people fighting, you know, they're identifying with each other or worship. Ancient China, Egypt, and Rome, they all had this certain flags or banners, if you will. We like to call it like the proto-flags. And a proto-flag, which dates back 3200 BCE, can be found from ancient Egypt, you know, showing them as part of a ceremonial procession imagery. But one thing that is really a turning point in this idea of how flags came to be is and why they are so like vastly used everywhere and so easy to manipulate and carry them around. It kind of ties back to the Chinese. They were the first ones to make flags out of fabric and attach them sideways. They were so much easier. They were much lighter to carry around, be seen from a distance. And that's why it takes you to later on to maritime explorations. You know, ships could communicate, friend and foe, right? They used the flags to communicate with each other. And then, you know, eventually the national flags, revolutionary causes kind of emerging, this idea of a symbol of identity.
So they have to be unique, don't they? They have to have individual qualities, but they also have to conform in a sense. They need to be readable by others who aren't within your group.
That's an interesting question, because the flags at the end, they do have symbolism that really takes place on what the story behind of it is, right? And not all of us can understand that. But the more a flag is displayed, like the American flag, for example, I mean, a lot of people don't know necessarily that each star represents a state, right? But there is a sense of the visual representation of that idea of a country. But not only, it goes so much beyond, it goes not only a country, but ideals. What is behind it? This flag is much more than defining a territory or who belongs to it.
Flags are interesting. So think about most countries now in the modern era have three primary symbols, official symbols. So they're going to have a national flag, they're going to have a coat of arms or seal, and they're going to have a national anthem. This has kind of become the global standard of official symbols.
Flag expert Annie Platoff, a former librarian at the University of California, Santa Barbara.
So, which are the ones that are easiest for the average citizen to use and recognize? It's probably the flag, because flags are simple. Flags can be displayed outside. They aren't complicated in most cases. In a lot of cases, you know, that's something children might do when they're learning to draw in school, is learning to draw the national flag and color it in. They move, so they catch your attention. So that's why I think that flags are particularly important in the world of national symbols, and why the use of flags as means of communication needs to be understood both by the sender and the receiver of the message.
Which brings us back to the flags of Britain and the way they've now been co-opted on a mass scale by anti-immigration and far-right activists. It has to be said the same thing has happened in Australia, with similar groups using the blue or red ensign as their symbol, but hardly on the same scale. Why then use a national flag in this way? Why not make a flag of your own, a bespoke flag of protest?
It's a powerful symbol. I mean, it's interesting to say, why are flags important? Why do any of us care about our flags? And that is because as we grow up in our nations, we emotionally experience our nation through sports events, through political occasions, through the commemoration of the past and wars and things like that. And the flag is often used as a symbol of that. So we have an emotional attachment to it, which actually becomes part of our emotional identity. It becomes part of the sense of self you have, which is connected to the nation around you. It's how modern nationalism works. So symbols are very important at bringing what one famous political scientist, Benedict Anderson, called the imagined community. It's how we all imagine who we are. So the symbol itself then gains power, right? So that's why politicians will constantly use, they'll constantly use the flag, much more than they used to actually, standing behind them. So if the symbol contains a certain amount of power, protest movements will also understand that. And the national flag is particularly important because it has a sacred element. So protest groups can put the flag up, and it's very difficult for authorities, be they local councils or the police or the government, even if they think the flag is being misused, shall we say, to take that down because of the sacred nature of a national flag.
And they have historic capital, don't they? I mean, they represent the history of a country. So that's why you would co-opt in this way a national flag.
That's the core of it, all right? It contains the sort of emotional history that a country has. You know, to be blunt, we have ceremonies every year that say people and fought and died for the flag. So it represents a certain view of the past. Now, some of that could be quite controversial, but because of that, it has a real sacred sense about it. That gives the flag a real sense of power, and that's why the flag becomes such a politically important tool to use. It's often used, obviously, by the establishment and by politicians, but it can also be used by people in forms of popular and sometimes unpopular protest.
Well, I think what's interesting about the St. George's flag is that I have seen it used in different ways. So when I see it being waved at a football match, you know, just by fans, that doesn't mean the same thing to me as when I see it used by people who are opposing immigration. And so I think this is the core point of discussion when you're talking about flag use and flag reuse. Is context. So I think a couple factors, you know, there's a lot going on in the UK because you've got the changes not really that long ago where, you know, Scotland got its own parliament, Wales got its own parliament. There's more identity assertion of the nationalities within the UK itself. But the English don't have a distinctly English parliament. The parliament in London is for the entire UK. So you've got, you know, represented in the Union flag, you've got the Scottish, the Northern Irish, the English, and then the Welsh are kind of left out of the Union flag. But then the Welsh have their own flag, the Scots have their own flag. And so the people who are English and have that identity feel a need for their own flag. On the other hand, that flag has been co-opted by anti-immigrant groups. So that makes it even more complicated because when you see somebody using the flag, are they saying, I'm English? Are they saying, I'm an English football fan? Or are they saying, I don't want non-English people in my country? And these are important messages. And it's important to remember that flags are a form of communication. And so when communication occurs, a signal is sent by the sender, and that signal is received by the viewer or the recipient of the symbol. And so successful communication relies on both the sender and the receiver having an interpretation or a meaning assigned to that symbol. So when you see flags used in multiple ways, it causes a confusion in the communication cycle because the sender might be meaning one thing, but the recipient, based on their experience or the context, may be taking a different meaning from that flag.
And what does that do to the power of that symbol over time? If you have, as you say, these various interpretations that are all valid in their own way, depending on context.
It really does cause confusion. And in some cases, you'll see that there are some flags that have become so associated with negative connotations or unpopular politics that they can no longer be used even in a neutral way. Other flags, and I think the flag of St. George is one of these. It really is based on the context, because again, the football fans, we can't interpret that as being bigoted or anti-immigrant at all. I mean, it's just football fandom, and people will wave their flags at the football match. So what's interesting to me, if you go to Scotland, it's obvious that people with Scottish identity that want to assert their identity display that flag for that reason. Doesn't mean they're part of the independence movement. Not necessarily. It may just be a way of saying, we're Scottish, you're in Scotland. Remember, this is Scotland. So it doesn't necessarily mean they're pro-independence. For example, when you see it in front of the Scottish Parliament, that's definitely not what the message that the official government is sending. But in England, again, it's more complicated because being sort of the dominant linguistic group and the center of government, it makes it more complicated for the English to have both a way to express their ethnic identity and having to navigate the complications of it being used for all these other political messages.
What should we make of the fact that, you know, MAGA rallies in the United States, the American flag, the national flag, is there and used all the time? It's very similar with far-right demonstrations in Australia to use the Australian national flag. What impact does that have, that sort of use of the flag, for very specific political purposes by one group within the society?
It is difficult to navigate, especially if you do not agree with the particular political group or voice that is predominantly using that flag at the moment that's getting the most attention. I'll out myself as not a supporter of the current American administration, and I live in California. So my neighborhood is very ethnically diverse. There are a lot of people of Hispanic origin and a lot of people who are probably Mexican American. So I will say that myself, during the first Trump administration, I was particularly self-conscious about putting out my American flag on holidays because I didn't want to send a message to those neighbors who might feel threatened by the administration that I was somehow anti-immigrant or anti-Hispanic or anti-Mexican American. So I found that that affected my own flag display behavior. What's more interesting, I think, is that here during the second Trump administration, when more and more people are participating in demonstrations, more and more I'm seeing the American flag flown correctly up, right side up at those demonstrations. At first, people were flying them upside down as a sign of distress, but more and more I'm seeing them being flown right side up as a message of, it's our flag too. It doesn't just belong to the right, and we're going to use it when we are out protesting, just like you've used it when they've supported the administration. So I think it's important for people, if your national flag is important to you and you do have another group or one aspect of your political spectrum trying to monopolize the flag, I think it's really important for people of all voices to get out and use that flag as equals to prove and assert that that flag belongs to everyone in the country and not just one group.
The idea that repurposing flags really reveals the symbolic potential, the fluidity that it has, right? Because they're so powerful kind of senses of identity, people can actually recall them. If things change, people can actually go and repurpose that flag to serve for their new ideologies, right? So when activists or extreme groups appropriate flags, they are essentially doing what they actually can do in a way that is engaging in this visual warfare, that contesting the ownership of that symbol, right? And there is nobody saying that they can't do that. What happens in Brazil, right? The Brazilian flag was always meant for soccer, for World Cup. That was basically the only time that you would see people wearing the Brazilian jerseys, the soccer jerseys, displaying the Brazilian flag. That was of the very cultural space that our flag represented there. And then the far right movement started to gain momentum in Brazil, and they start like repurposing the flag. There is this big kind of idea, the same here with the American flag related to MAGA movement, etc. There is a shift of perception, and sometimes that there is no coming back, right? And nowadays, like people wearing the jersey in Brazil, like the colors of the flag, it's not soccer day anymore, right? It's revealing some different narratives, a different discourse.
But again, as you say, if a flag, a symbol is repurposed, it can always be repurposed again in the future to suit a completely different cause.
Correct. And, you know, at the end of the day, I feel like this is just kind of a reminder to us that meaning doesn't live in the flag itself, right? But it lives in how people use them. And that's where things get interesting because we can't necessarily control that.
New York-based graphic designer Laura Schofield. And you're listening to Rear Vision, an ABC Radio National production. I'm Anthony Fennell. As we've heard, the co-opting of national flags by activists and political extremists is happening in Britain, in Brazil, the United States, Australia, and across Europe. Today on the program, we've been asking why, and what are the long-term impacts from the use of national flags for partisan protest? British Prime Minister Keir Starmer recently condemned the use of the Union Jack by far-right anti-immigration demonstrators. He declared, and this is the quote, "Our flag represents our diverse country, and we will never surrender it to those that use it as a symbol of violence, fear, and division." Arguably, the scale of the recent flag protests in the UK is unprecedented, in mainland Britain, that is. But flag-centred activism has a very long history in Northern Ireland, and it's been the focus of Dominic Bryan's research for many years.
It has a really long tradition, but there's an interesting twist in that tradition which might also explain what's happening in other places. So, of course, with the divisions in Northern Ireland that many of your listeners will understand between Britishness and Irishness, then expressing one's identity through all of these symbols becomes, shall we say, hyper important. And on days like remembering the Battle of the Boyne in 1690, remembering the Battle of the Somme, Unionists have long put up flags actually on their houses. Traditionally, they'd have a Union Jack. It would go on their houses, or they would put it up across the streets or on what are called orange arches. Now, in the early 2000s, something else started to develop. Firstly, there was a lot of contestation between two loyalist, that's pro-unionist, paramilitary groups, the UDA and the UVF. And they started demarking territory and residential areas between each other. And here's the interesting twist. By that time, you could order lots of very cheap flags online to supply you. Because if you think before, when you owned your own flag, you looked after it, you took it down, you kept it clean. But these are a lot of cheap throwaway flags. And this tells us a little bit about how they're being used now. And thousands of them went up in Northern Ireland, particularly in that period after the peace process, as these paramilitary groups started to demarcate their area. Some of them are paramilitary flags, but quite a lot of them will be Union Jacks, or they'll be remembering the First World War, or they're like using Scottish flags as well. So you now have a context in which these flags are being used in their thousands to demarcate residential space in Northern Ireland with very cheap throwaway flags that it's really not worth taking down whilst you put them up because you can't use them again. So for the last three decades, particularly, we have struggled with the marking of territory across Northern Ireland using, frankly, cheap national flags.
And is it possible that in the mainland UK, we'll see a similar trend over time, that it won't fade away, that like Northern Ireland, this use of the flag will intensify and just be prolonged?
I think that's the big question, actually, because we know from what people often call traditions that they change over time. So to give an example that you will know well, you know, if you look at how Gallipoli is remembered in Australia, it hasn't always been the same. Those sort of forms of remembrance have shifted, often due to the political context that you're in. So we know that these sort of political cultural outworkings don't stay the same. So the question is, I think in the other parts of the United Kingdom, is this going to be sustained? Now, in Northern Ireland, it's sustained because we have commemorative days. We have very clear periods where they're put up. That, of course, doesn't really exist in the same way in England and Scotland. The second point to that is, do the authorities allow it to be sustained? Because actually, and this is true both in Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK, you haven't got authority to put a flag up on a lamppost. I'm not going to say it's illegal as such, but because of its street furniture and because it's by roads, you're not allowed to put things on lampposts. So in a technical way, it's also illegal. The authorities could intervene. Now, in Northern Ireland, they very rarely do. So there's two questions. Firstly, will it be sustained? And I've got a feeling it probably won't be, but I couldn't be sure on that. And secondly, in what way do the authorities intervene if it remains a serious problem?
And what kind of policy changes, or indeed attitude changes, procedural changes, could be put in place that would make a difference?
Well, it was a question I myself was very deeply involved with because I was the co-chair of a commission, cross-party commission in Northern Ireland to look at it, called the Flags, Identity, Culture and Tradition Commission, with all the parties that I was negotiating with. And we looked long and hard at this. In a sense, there's a tension between people's right to use their flag and express them. You know, the right of freedom of expression is a long one, is an important one, as against people's right not to be intimidated. And the state has to find some sort of balance towards that. Now, my answer would be not that you stop altogether putting things on lampposts, but they have to be done for particular occasions, and it has to be done for a short period of time. I really would argue that if people are leaving flags up around residential areas, particularly for long periods of time, then this is a clear example of territory marking and intimidation. That's where I would draw the line, but we await to see what authorities do over the next months and years.
Dominic Bryan, Professor of Social Anthropology at Queen's University, Belfast. To finish off today's program, a twist of sorts. It isn't just current national flags that have been co-opted by partisan causes. It's also the flags of the past. Old national flags, no longer official, can find a new purpose. Annie Platoff again.
One category would be during a revolutionary period, when the flag that was used before the current regime, or one that was used, you know, several generations back, is used by a rebel group in order to assert their sense of national identity, but not their sense of association with the current regime. And so two very, very recent cases since the Arab Spring of that would be Libya and Syria. So in these cases, they're flags that were originally official flags of a particular regime in the country. That flag had gone out of use. People who were opposed to a different regime started using the flags as their symbol, as part of their revolutionary effort. And in both countries, once those revolutionary efforts were successful in toppling the opposed regime, they have readopted formally these former flags as the official flags of the country. So that has happened multiple times in different countries. One of my favorite examples is the Ethiopian flag that was used from 1897 to 1974. So basically the old imperial flag. It's horizontal stripes of green, yellow, and red with the Lion of Judah. And that flag now, when you see it, is associated with the Rastafarian movement. And this is because they believe that Emperor Haile Selassie was the returned Messiah. So it's become a religious symbol, but we're not done yet. Not only is it a religious symbol, but because of the connection between Rastafarianism and reggae and Jamaican culture, that flag has become a symbol of reggae music. And also because of the cannabis culture, it can be interpreted with, sometimes they'll put a cannabis leaf in instead of the lion. You'll see that flag even used as a cannabis flag or a pot flag, I guess you could call it. So I think that one is really an interesting connection because that has nothing really to do with politics. And sometimes you'll see that flag. I have one in my collection that has Bob Marley in the middle of it. So, you know, I think that's a really, really interesting cultural phenomenon with that one.
A bit of reggae to see us out. Flag expert and historian Annie Platoff, ending today's edition of Rear Vision. We also heard from Professor Dominic Bryan in Belfast and Laura Schofield in New York. Rear Vision is an ABC Radio National production. I'm Anthony Fennell. Until next time, cheers.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.